Now we present an encore presentation of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander.
Stocks rose this past week as China reopens. And this, as you remember, has been one of the three keys to the bottom that we've been looking for. So this was a positive for the market overall, even though it was a somewhat slow week. Still good overall. I'm not complaining. Always like to be up. So there we go. Pretty good week. And this week was largely quiet, and rightly so, as the main influence on stocks right now is inflation, labor data, and what those mean for what the Fed is going to do. Now, talking about inflation, Friday we saw the University of Michigan's 1 in 5 year inflation expectation, and that was not the greatest. The 5 year number showed that things really didn't change very much from last month. In other words, inflation probably sticking around for a while. But on the bright side, which was interesting, was the 1 year did drop a little bit, showing that, again, as we're seeing, things are starting to slow down and the Fed's moves, if you will, are working. So next week is going to be a pretty noisy week. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of data that's coming that's going to be pretty important. I will be paying attention to it. And next weekend, we will be talking about what it means. But I'm starting to see some things set up right now, and I'm glad you tuned in this morning because I want to share that with you. So next week, we're going to see a couple things. First, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. It's a direct measure of inflation, extremely important. The Fed will be looking at that, and we hear them talk on Wednesday about how much they're raising rates. That'll be important. So remember, I'm looking for a half a point raise next week. And so if you're borrowing money right now and it's tied to that credit rate, expect your money to get more expensive by at least a half a point. If it goes up 75 basis points, which is possible, then your borrowing costs will go up by 0.75%. It's just that simple. So I see a lot of that with accounts that we're looking at lately where they're borrowing money against, say, a margin loan. That's tied directly to that Fed funds rate, plus a point, of course, or more if they make that spread. That's how they make their money. So be aware of that. Be aware of that as you position your portfolio for next year. Is it going to cost you more to own those things? And does that make sense? If you're paying 6 or 7% for that, are you making that in your stocks? If you're not, then maybe you should be lightening up. The other things we're looking at next week is going to be the ECB, European Community Bank. They're also going to talk about whether they're raising rates. Of course, that'll affect the global markets. And the other one I'm going to be paying attention to is retail sales. Because again, in the US, the consumers are super important. If they're spending, then that's a good sign. If they're spending less or starting to pull back, well, that's a bad sign. And so I'm looking for the signs on the wall right now, which as of right now, aren't looking the greatest. So at this point, if the Fed next week stays about the same as Chairman Powell was talking about last November 30th, then I think we could see a spark or a year-end rally, if you will, in stocks. But again, nothing that's going to be terribly large. And I just don't see it as far as things I'm looking at right now. So again, I wanted to give you the positive and negative, but that's the positive and negative. Now, I got a question from a listener this week, and it's a good one. Here's the question. Why is the VIX, which is the volatility index, why is it so low? And is it losing its credibility overall as we analyze markets? Great question, Mike. Thanks for asking. The VIX first caught my attention back in the first quarter of this year. You may remember when there were new lows in the S&P 500, they weren't accompanied by new highs in the VIX, which is typically the case. This wasn't typical in that these new lows were not mirrored by highs on the VIX. And so that got my attention because typically the inverse is true between equity markets and the VIX. Now, the same thing happened again this year in May, then in June, and in October. That's my dog walking around here. So the logical question is, well, why is that happening right now? The short answer is that we believe that we're going to remain in what's called a liquidation phase of a market cycle. And what that means is these more sophisticated hedge funds, institutional managers who trade portfolios, they're selling their longer-term equity holdings right now. They're liquidating. They're getting out of them. Institutional money managers are the biggest players in the options market as they hedge against their long equity positions by buying options on those. And that's what typically drives your cyclical bull markets. So I think that explains why when stocks go down, the VIX go up. But the VIX is basically a measure of demand for hedges by these big investors that are trading in the market. And so when institutional investors are liquidating the stock positions, they're not having a need for the hedge. So what they do is they unwind those positions in the derivative market, and ultimately that pressures the VIX. Earlier this year, we looked back to the bear market that followed the dot-com bubble and then the great financial crisis in 2008. And in both instances, I was talking about how that same dynamic that we saw in 2002 and again in 2008 we're seeing right now, whereas the S&P fell to new lows, but the VIX did not rise to new highs. So what does that mean? Well, I believe the VIX is low right now because there is fading demand for the hedges, like I was saying. But what does it mean looking ahead? And where am I thinking 2023 is going to go as a result of this index? Well, looking ahead, there are two ways the VIX will provide value as we start to focus on 2023. Because again, this has been one of the most difficult market environments I've seen in the 30 years I've been doing this. So what does it mean? Well, first, the VIX does still rise when stocks fall, just not extremely. So when the VIX does begin to move higher, that's going to be a warning sign that we're in for another downdraft on the S&P 500. Second, bear market bottoms are always formed on the back of retail capitulation. And this is just something we have not seen in 2022 as we have worked our way through this bear market that we're still in, by the way. So capitulation in 2002, you remember that. Almost 2.5 years of pain. Capitulation in 2008, 2009, we all remember that. It was extremely scary and it was painful. And it was also associated with a surge in the VIX. So once we actually see the VIX make a meaningful move higher, say towards the 50 level, then you should start to look for additional signs that the market's bottoming and that we're now in line for a recovery. Now, the VIX meaningfully broke through its downtrend from October this past week. So there was something that happened this past week as we rose over 22. That was the number on the VIX Friday, 22. So that upside break in the VIX, I'm going to say this, materially raises the risk that the broad market volatility is going to increase here in the near future. Now, this could happen next week with the Fed. This could also happen with the CPI data release or the retail numbers I was talking about. So next week's going to be important. And as I mentioned earlier, we have not seen any capitulation yet. And so I don't think it's over. And so the path of least resistance when it comes to stocks right now, hate to say it, but it's lower as we go into 2023. So I hope that was helpful. Let's talk about bonds. Over the past 6 weeks, bonds have quietly staged a solid rally as the yield on the 10-year Treasury has declined from 4.24% in late October to 3.56 just Friday. Now, the reason for the rally in bonds is this. First, all global bond yields went up thanks to the UK trussonomic crisis, right? That's plain and simple what happened. That happened in September and October. Second, inflation is finally showing signs that it's peaking. Look at the Manheim Used Cars Index. Did you know that used cars are down about 14% year over year according to that index? Well, guess what? Prices are coming down. It's just that simple. Third, economic growth is rolling over. I've been talking about that for weeks. However, while the bounce in bonds has been welcomed, it's important to note that the 10-year Treasury yield is just back to where it was before the UK debacle. And bond indexes are still solidly lower on a year-to-date basis. If we look at the index AGG, it's down 11.6% year-to-date. So I know what you're saying. What's going on with the bounce in bonds? What does it mean for next year? Well, the bounce in bonds raises an important question. If the most likely outcome for the economy in 2023 is slowing growth and further declines in inflation, then in that environment, how should you position yourself in 2023? Now, I say parts because if expectations of a material economic slowdown and a decline in inflation come to fruition, there remain parts of the bond market that are going to be vulnerable to a decline, more so than other parts of the bond market because the bond market is very diverse. Like what parts? What should you be possibly getting out of right now? Well, junk. Again, these are my opinions, by the way. Junk, high yield, debt, senior loans, floating rate debt. The reason? Because investors will begin to start to worry about corporate earnings and credit quality more than inflation. Think of it as the opposite of this year. Junk, JNK is the symbol, high yield bond ETF. It's down 11% year to date, while LQD, again, an index for investment-grade bonds, are off about 15%. So the outperformance of junk as compared to liquid is because the primary concern of investors this year has been inflation and rising rates, plain and simple. A company's ability to make coupon payments wasn't a concern this year because companies have cash and they have the ability to pay. So investors have reached for the highest yield to offset inflation. Now, if the macro outlook changes, which I'm saying it is going to, again, this is my opinion, okay? If it changes where economic growth and credit quality come into concern again, people get concerned about that, then I think you should expect the opposite next year. What do I mean by that specifically? Well, on the corporate side, LQD right now has a yield of approximately 5.2%. This is a 30-day yield, an effective duration of 8 years, making this potentially attractive to a contrarian investor as we look at 2023. If you look at duration, I could be looking at the opposite next year, meaning that in 2022, what carried the day? Well, short-term. Short-term debt did well, did better. It's still down, but did better. And so longer duration next year might overperform short-term. So when you see contracting economic growth, you might want to move to longer duration and higher quality because that's usually the playbook when we're entering a recession, which I think we are. And I'm going to talk more about it next week about a recession. That'll be all about the show next week. So tune in for that. And if you're looking at longer dated treasuries, something to take a look at might be for you. Maybe, again, look at your prospectuses, read your data. But TLT, that's the most popular ETF. But maybe not the best performer in that sort of environment. Maybe take a look at the Vanguard Long-Term Treasury ETF, VGLT. That might be better. Again, you got to do your own homework. Finally, I understand objections to buying longer dated debt when the curve is inverted because investors can get higher yields and lower duration. But if we're entering a material contraction, you want duration. And that's because when the Fed cuts rates and that yield curve starts to uninvert, you're going to miss out on substantial principal appreciation on those longer-term bonds as they do what bonds do when rates go the other way. So my read on the bond market, it's telling me right now that the Fed has raised rates too high, and these rates are going to cause a recession, and it could be significant. So what are your support levels on the S&P? Well, 3964. That should be a very important number for you as you look at where we traded on Friday. And if we go through that with meaningful volume, guess what? Next week could see 3828. So there we are. Let's get on with it.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.